Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinis.
I'm Kayla Itzinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Stay tuned for an entire breakdown of what we've been up to at South by Southwest so far. And then at the end of the episode, be sure to listen all the way to the end because it's going to be the entire interview that we were able to do, that we were blessed to do with We Were Dangerous filmmakers Morgan Wadru, Josephine Stewart Tafue, and Maddie Dye.
They're lovely.
Kit.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things South by Southwest edition. We are in the heart of Austin, Texas. If you've never listened to the show before, what a treat you're in for. It's nothing like this.
Yeah, what a great episode to tune in on. An episode where we don't have all our equipment, we don't have video, and we're just kind of shooting the shit in a hotel room.
We're in a hotel room, so if the timbre of the audio sounds different, that is why. We warned you, though, that we would be on this journey and catching you up on what we've been up to very soon. So that's happening now. Normally, we do TV recaps, film reviews, all kinds of silly nonsense like Dungeons and Dragons games based around Stranger Things.
That was a good one.
Yeah. Well, we've got our Fallout coverage dropping soon because that show comes out on April 11th, officially April 12th, but Amazon's been dropping shows the day before. And they're actually, I think, dropping the entire season of Fallout in one day.
Yeah, I'm so happy.
It doesn't fuck up our podcast at all.
You guys ready to see another dehydrated husk of Steve?
So that's what you can He's look coming. Forward to that soon. But we just want to catch you up. We've seen a lot of movies, done a lot of things, been on a grand adventure. And on this glorious hump day, just wanted to catch you guys up on what we've been up to. You can email the show at streamingthingspod@gmail.com. You can support the show financially at patreon.com/streamingthings. And so we're in South by Southwest. Steve, you've gotten to do a lot of cool things. You went a little dolo yesterday, as they say. I want to hear a little bit about, before we talk about Roadhouse and Monkey Man and I Saw the TV Glow and We Were Dangerous and Y2K, how was your journey without me? Because you haven't even talked to me much about it. We were busy. You went and saw Star Trek.
Star Trek Discovery season 5 premiere.
And you ran into Nicolas Cage. So let's talk about that.
I don't know if I would say I ran into Nicolas Cage. He was in the same vicinity as me.
That's the same thing. So how was Star Trek? I mean, you're a fan of Discovery. I had no idea that Doug Jones was one of the characters. And you got to see I heard he's pretty short.
He's a very short man. You wouldn't think it. No, he's actually like enormous. He's like out of every, so they had several members of the cast on the stage. after the premiere ended. And it's kind of funny because he's literally the tallest and the thinnest person out of everybody on the stage. It's like someone took both ends of this man and just pulled him upwards, and because he's so tall. But he's such a lovely man. Everybody in the Star Trek Discovery cast is just some of the greatest human beings out there. Sinequa Martin Green, who plays Captain Michael, she's so fucking, like, she's one of the most beautiful people in the world, and she just has like the most infectious smile, and she just, it seems like the nicest person. So whenever they had her on stage, she'd be like, "Hi everybody, aren't you guys excited? I'm so excited." And her enthusiasm is so infectious.
It sounds like the Build-A-Bear employee that I ran into.
"Are you guys ready to have, rub your hearts, rub your hearts so the Trek is filled with love?
Do you want it to be big and strong or soft and cuddly?
Do you want to boldly go or not go at all?"
Make it so.
It. Now it was a really fun premiere. It was in one of the smaller theaters. So, the way that, our situation works out is our hotel is actually like right across the street from the main theater, the Paramount, which is like a 1200 seat old school theater.
No big deal.
And right next to it is a smaller, more conventional movie theater, but, it still has like the old style seats, but they're actually formed to fit actual human beings. Yeah. Unlike the Paramount Theater, which is formed to fit, I don't know.
Oompa Loompas.
Oompa Loompas, yeah. We're at the Stateside Theater. The premiere happens, and you know, I'm a pretty big fan of Discovery. I've only like watched every episode one time, but I've always had a great time. It's one of those shows where it benefits sticking through, because the first season is admittedly kind of muddy and not the best, and a little weird and not the best ways. And even the creator Alex Kurtzman was up there, and he's like, so if you're here in this room, thank you for sticking with us through that first season. Like, even they're like openly like, it wasn't great. But every season after that has been so good. And this season, the big thing that they were saying, if you're a huge fan of Star Trek, if you're really into Discovery, the thing to look forward to about this season is that it is their adventure season. They kept hammering that point home. This is the adventure season. There's going to be a lot of action, a lot of Indiana Jones-esque, puzzles in tombs,
shenanigans
type stuff. It's the adventure season. And the first episode really just kind of pops off with a warp spaceship warp chase scene. And then there's like this really cool, like, they're not hover bikes, but they're like these futuristic little dirt bikes that are on like a
peloton,
but they're on like the Dune planet. So they're flying around trying to stop a rocky avalanche from destroying a settlement. It's high octane, it's high action, it's really funny and very sweet. And it's seriously the most, you know, go woke or go broke. It's the most woke Star Trek's ever been for a show. It's woke even by Star Trek standards. And I fucking love that about it. And, so yeah, it was a really great time to see all of that. And that cast is so like a lot of like literally
they're making Star Trek woke too. Oh, now it's diverse in space.
Now I've seen everything. Star Trek, diverse bullshit. But no, every single movie we've seen has had the thing where the cast and crew comes up and everyone's like, everyone up here on the stage is like a family. And I gotta say, that may be true, but I didn't feel it except when I saw the Star Trek Discovery cast, because those, all of them up there were like goofing off the entire time. And they were just in sync, like randomly, I forget which one started them, but one of them started just like aiming at others and pretending to do blow darts. And they all acted like they were like falling on the ground, acting like they got blow darted randomly.
They 100% went to play Monopoly after that.
Yeah, oh, for sure. For sure. Or a game that people like to play together.
Twister.
Yeah. So I'm very excited for Star Trek, Discovery season 5. It's the final season. It's a beautiful show. And it's really the Star Trek that kind of created the mold for what modern Trek is, at least visually. It kind of set that stage for what it looks like.
One of the best things that we did kind of together, because we actually watched it separately, but we saw a movie called We Were Dangerous.
Yeah.
From New Zealand. And I watched the screener. And then after we interviewed the director, the producer, and the writer, Steve went to watch it afterward because they were such nice people. He wanted to support the film. They don't have distribution in the US yet, so they need all of our help and buzz and talking about it. But it's a film about young girls getting sent to a reform school. There's some natural rebellion that happens. It's run by a character called the Matron. And you can think of like the principal, like
Turnbull. Was it Trunstall? Anyway,
from Matilda.
The lady from Matilda is kind of what she's like.
Like if the lady from Matilda was like super into God.
Yeah, very religious instead of into like working out. Then that would be her character.
Trunchbull's God is the gym.
But it's a debut film from director Josephine Stewart DeFue, produced by Morgan Waru, and written by Maddie Dye. Mm-hmm. Ooh. And if you're not, you can't see this because there's no video, but I memorized all that.
Yeah, you did.
You guys can be impressed. But we got to interview them, Steve and I, together for 20 minutes, and they were the most intelligent, sincere, sweetest people that I've met in a while. And the funniest thing happened, like the movie's fantastic and they had all kinds of wonderful things to say about it. You'll get to see the video soon on our YouTube channel and stuff, I'm sure. And then I'll clip it for Instagram and TikTok. But, I was honest with them about the fact, and Steve going into this was like, he doubted me. I was like, I'm going to tell him how I used to call you Stu. From the character from what we do in the shadows.
Because Taika Waititi is an executive producer for this film.
Yes.
So it would make sense to invoke the name of Taika Waititi.
But not only that, but I just assume everyone from New Zealand loves that movie. And Steve's like, I doubt that. You know, that's probably not the case, right? So I go in, we're talking and shooting the shit. I organically get to bring it up. Like, well, Steve, we actually used to call Stu, because I mentioned Taika Waititi being an executive producer. And immediately all of their eyes lit up. Oh, no way. That's kind of offensive. And I was like, yeah. I don't think so. Stu's such a good guy. It's the whole bit.
Yeah. And they all immediately turn to me and they're like, don't let him get away with that, Steve. We stand Steve. We love him.
Who doesn't stand Steve?
We love Steve.
So a couple of days later, Steve goes to one of the screenings of We Were Dangerous. And there's a live Q&A with all three of those lovely women. And outside, you tell the story, Steve.
Yeah. So I sit in the Q&A, you know, they're geniuses. They're super humble. They're sweet. And I just loved hearing, they actually gave like really great feedback in the Q&A about how they approach filmmaking, which is, I'm excited to talk about at some point later on. But, so I left cause I wasn't going to just stick around and bother them. Cause I, you know, it's South by Southwest. They got a ton of shit to do. So I go to the restroom. And the restroom is directly across from our theater. So when I exited the restroom, it was the exact same time that they were all exiting the theater. And it's the first one to see me was Maddie Dye, the writer. And she immediately points at me and goes, oh my God, Steve, or should I say Stu?
I love that so
and
much.
And then they all started laughing and I got to hang out with them for like 5 minutes or so outside the theater, just telling them how much I love their movie.
And the thing that makes that so wonderful is longtime listeners of the show will remember probably that we used to literally just call Steve Stu in like the first or second season of Stranger Things. And his name was Stu in parentheses on the show notes.
For the longest
we
time.
We really leaned into that. It was like our first inside joke.
I think we just wiped that off the description maybe a year ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And now that original OG streaming things inside joke is international.
It's international, baby.
People in New Zealand, the Kiwis are laughing about Stu.
We met this guy named Stu. He was quite lovely. And his friend Kit, Liza.
He's Eliza.
They liked your name too.
Why wouldn't they? It's badass.
You're like, I'm known as Kit Laser online. They're like, Laser?
Oh.
They leaned in, as they say.
It's lean in content. That's what Zaslav would call it.
But what did you think about the movie We Were Dangerous? Like you said, it doesn't have distribution yet, so we want to support it as much as possible.
I think it's great. It, you know, this is the highest praise that I can give it, and the most honest praise is that one of my favorite movies and books of all time is something that I'm forgetting. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and it's like One Flew for Teen Girls. Is the vibe that it gave me, like thematically, you know, a lot of it's very similar, but there's not a lot of stories like that, for girls.
Yeah.
And, I was trying very hard to, and that's why I love the conversation with the creative team so much. Cause I was able to be honest about like, I'm a dude, you know, like my journey with feminism has been one of thinking, oh, okay, you just have to center a woman. And when reality, that's not the case. You need to be honest about what it's like to be a woman. And the only way to do that is to put women or allow women to tell the stories behind the camera, you know, with the pen and paper and behind the camera. And that's something that's taken decades for guys to figure out. Like, I don't know what else you want, dude. There's a freaking, the chick's the main character. What else can I do?
We made a Tomb Raider. All right. What else you want?
You seen Alien? We've been doing this. And it's like, yeah, but maybe Sigourney Weaver, let her direct a movie and see what kind of story she tells. Now you're talking crazy. So I was able to be honest with them about that and have a really great conversation with them along those lines. And I really do think it's a special movie that a lot of people are going to identify with a bunch of, for the most part, unknown to us actors. I know they're big stars in New Zealand.
Yeah, all of them were amazing. I mean, even the woman who plays the matron, they kept saying that she's like a New Zealand icon, but I've never, I don't think so. I don't think I've experienced her acting, but she's incredible in the movie.
Yeah.
All the young women in it are phenomenal.
I can't speak highly enough about it. And you got some really good insight into the decisions they made with camera work.
I didn't even tell you this, but they told a story. So the young girl who plays so there's three main girls.
Yeah. Nellie, Louisa, and Daisy.
So the girl who plays Daisy, Manea Hall, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Probably not.
So she's the youngest, and she actually auditioned for the role over, like, she just sent in a video, like a cell phone video of herself, and emailed it to them and didn't tell her parents that she did that. And she didn't tell her parents that she auditioned for a movie until she got the call to come to whatever city that she had to drive into to accept the part. And I just thought that was so funny. Like, they're like, yeah, well, she's perfect for Daisy then, if that's the type of thing that she does, is like secretly go behind her parents' back to audition for a movie.
Mom, can I be in a movie? Circle yes or no.
Circle yes or no. And we didn't talk about this, but like there's a scene in that movie that I fucking absolutely adore. And it was when...
No spoilers.
Well, it's a scene where the girls are dancing.
Yes.
Like they're supposed to be cleaning. Like
the climax, yeah.
They're supposed to be cleaning and they all start dancing in slow motion. And it's... The way it's shot is really just like, it just encapsulates like young fun and like young innocent fun and just being who you are. And then like juxtaposed to the next scene where the religious people are like, I caught them doing rock and roll. it's a funny, it's a sweet movie. Yeah. I think you'll like it.
And they talked about, you were telling me how they used, tripods and static shots for the matrons and the adults and gimbals and then handheld kind of shaky, less controlled camera work for the girls for many reasons. Obviously the matron prefers order and stability and the girls are still figuring things out. Things are more chaotic, but it also creates tension because, you know, the girls never know when the matron's going to catch them being themselves and get them in trouble.
Yeah. And that's when they're at the most danger of getting in trouble is when they're being themselves.
Yeah.
And they also spoke really highly about how the matron character, even though she's the antagonist of the movie, you really kind of feel sorry for that character in the long run. Cause the way she's written is she is also a victim of these, systems that she is helping enforce. Like she was once these girls when she was younger, but she grew up in the system and just kind of her life led her into helping advocate for the system that was helping her keep her down. And throughout the movie, you see her several times when she speaks to like her boss, who's like a man, and you can just kind of see, and she's just a multifaceted character. And that's why I think like she is such a good, antagonist for a movie like this. It's like, you don't truly hate her, even though she's like kind of a monster.
Yeah.
But yeah, and those are the best villains sometimes.
My favorite line from the movie is, I'm paraphrasing now because I don't have my notes, but it's something like, it's really hard. It's difficult to reform girls who don't believe there's anything wrong with them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the core theme of the movie. And it's just something that I adore. I think it's really special. Again, it doesn't yet have US distribution. So if this sounds interesting to you, be sure, tweet about it.
Write your senator.
Post about it. Yeah. Call Congress right after you tell them not to ban TikTok, which they're voting on today. And my whole career might be over. But yeah, definitely check out. It's called We Were Dangerous. And it's a lovely, lovely film. But the South by Southwest opened with Roadhouse. And the remake starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Daniela Melchior, and directed by Doug Liman, and also starring, very predictably, Conor McGregor in his first feature film. And the movie was actually really fun with the crowd that we had. I don't think it'll be as fun streaming at home. If you're a fan of the original and just dumb action movies, I think it'll be a delight. It's certainly serviceable. And I love Doug Liman's previous work. I mean, I'm the world's biggest fan of Edge of Tomorrow, aka so Live, good. Die, Repeat.
Aka All You Need Is Kill.
However, Conor McGregor is really the thing we need to talk about the most. At the Q&A, this guy, it was,
moderated by Dax Shepard.
What a surprise. I love Dax Shepard. Yeah, Dax Shepard, who apparently is the self-proclaimed largest or biggest Roadhouse fan of all time. So yeah. I guess he just called someone and was like, I need to be at the premiere.
And I bet he regretted that.
He seemed to be regretting it as the Q&A went on.
On the stage is Jessica Williams, Daniela Melchior, Jake Gyllenhaal, all of these, you know, actors. Jessica Williams, all these people that were in the film. And Post Malone was up there, but not Doug Liman, who was boycotting it. He was in the audience, which is silly, but he was mad they're not going to show this in theaters. And it would be a better experience if they did. And Conor McGregor is answering everyone else's question with this boisterous monologue. He won't stop. And it's cringy, but also like really funny because it's like, I can't believe he's doing it again.
Yeah.
Even Dax Shepard at one point just has to be like, I guess you're never going to fucking shut up. So we're not going to get through this. Or the studio really wants me to ask these, Conor, can you please, you know? And
at one point he's like, can you just ask these then? Like, what am I up here for?
He's just having the time of his life.
Yeah. I made a super cut of it on Instagram. Yeah. If you want to see just a little window into how insane it was.
But also his Irish accent is so thick that can't what makes it even funnier is we don't fucking know what he's even saying.
Yeah.
Tired of having a smartest part. We're like, all right, man.
She's still going.
It's the third time I'm going to speak.
But yeah, Conor McGregor is a problematic person in general. But like,
I guess I don't know anything about him. I mean, he just reminded me of like a boy, like a heel from the WWE or something.
Oh, he's 100% being a carny. Like in that moment, he's definitely like he was cutting like almost WWE style promos on Jake Gyllenhaal. Like, oh, fella, you think you can take me in the ring? You come over here and we'll do a little jaunty jig. Come on, fella.
Yeah, somebody said, Jake really held his own against Conor McGregor. And they were just talking about the process of filmmaking and how hard Jake worked on getting in shape and learning fighting. And Conor just had to step in like, only for the movie, you know.
Just need you to know, I could kick his candy ass right here if I wanted to.
I would have fucking took him out. We know, man, you're literally a professional fighter.
Yeah, you murder people.
But Jake's
probably
like crazy. He might like bite your throat out. Just be aware. He might pull a Tyson.
That is true. Jake has that silent, like, yeah, I seem cool, but I can fucking kill you at any second energy. Yeah,
I will snap. I am likely the one that yelled at Rebecca Ferguson. But yeah, I honestly would condone the watching of Roadhouse, the remake that comes out relatively soon on Amazon Prime Video, I think March 21st. You're listening to this on the 13th, so you don't have to wait long.
No. And like you said, I went into Roadhouse like fully expecting to completely hate it and like shit on it later. Mm-hmm. And I had a surprisingly good time with it. It's really pretty funny. A lot of the humor, there is some funny spots with Conor McGregor in the movie, but I think Jake Gyllenhaal is like fucking hysterical in it with how like quiet and...
Yeah, a lot of those jokes really land.
Yeah, and a lot of it's like very...
it's very self-aware.
Self-aware,
Knows it's a remake of a performance that'll never be topped.
There's one scene where someone's fighting him and they keep punching a piano. Like they're trying to punch him, but he'll move and they'll hit the piano. And then he just slyly goes, this piano's out of key before he hits him back.
It's honestly
stuff like that.
It's the opposite of Monkey Man. Mm-hmm. And it's everything that Dev was talking about in his speech about what's happened to action films in general. You know, mm-hmm. This is a story of an underdog. I don't have any quippy one-liners, you know.
And Roadhouse is just quippy one-liners.
It's the op, you know, I just thought that was fascinating.
I will say, I do think watching it with that audience did make me see the movie better. I'm sure if I watched it by myself, I would probably hate the movie if I'm being perfectly honest. There is a really bad CG double in the like very beginning of the movies, but if you can get past that, I think the fight scenes are pretty good.
Well, a lot of critics were talking about CG issues throughout the film.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
We were pretty far away. That was our first night there. We didn't know how the theater worked. And
we were in the attic of the theater.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to a movie theater where you're looking down to see the movie and not up? Yeah. We were looking down.
And the seats were just really tall on the balcony. So if you want to, I would highly recommend going to South by Southwest. Just make sure you line up early or get as many passes as you can. Mm-hmm. Because there's definitely varying degrees of enjoyment based on where you're sitting, at least in the main theater.
Yes.
A lot of it's at the Alamo Draft House, which is phenomenal no matter where you're at.
Yeah.
The Stateside Theater, like Steve mentioned earlier, is great. Pretty much the whole room is awesome. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I would recommend Roadhouse when it comes out in a couple of weeks. I think I wouldn't hate it if I saw it by myself at home, but I would have been like, that was fine. But with that raucous drunk crowd, I was like, that was kind of badass.
Yeah, literally every joke was like, every joke tore the house down. Every time someone got their ass kicked, there was like, what? Like everyone was feeling it. They were vibing with that movie. It was kind of wild.
Yeah. And it turns out, I know you guys would never have expected this, but any movie that you watch with Post Malone is more fun. Who knew? I would have never expected I would enjoy watching a movie with Post Malone.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't either.
So we saw two movies. This is another factoid that was not on your bingo card. I guarantee it.
Oh yeah.
We just watched two movies at this festival.
Two. In 2 days.
That star Fred Durst.
That's right. From Limp Bizkit. Fred Durst is acting now.
Witnessed him in person on stage dressed in a 90s outfit. The first movie makes...
He looked like Ken's like winter outfit.
Yeah.
From Barbie.
I'm just Ben. Dropping my mixtape coming soon. That was beautiful, terrible. Man. Any hoozle. Yeah, the first movie makes a lot more sense. It's a comedy, an offbeat kind of this is the end style apocalyptic joke movie directed by Kyle Mooney, who did Brigsby Bear, which is a movie I adore. I'm obsessed with it. Yeah,
I love that movie.
I love it. I didn't like Y2K anywhere near as much as Brigsby Bear.
Yeah.
But if you like This Is the End, you like goofy shit, I think you're going to, and you're a millennial. If you're born before, let's say 1990, I think you're going to really enjoy most of this movie just for the Easter eggs to your own life alone.
Yeah. Well, the premise of the movie is basically like, what if Y2K happened? Basically.
Yeah. What if the robots crashed the world as soon as the clock hit midnight in 1999 December 31st.
And it's a disaster comedy. And Kyle Mooney, a lot of people probably know him even more from his work on SNL. Mm-hmm. He's basically just, I mean, he's in the movie as well, playing basically himself, but with dreads.
Yeah. The white guy with dreads.
And there's a lot of white guy with dreads jokes.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, there's a lot of aux cords and CD players and video stores.
AOL Instant Messenger. There's a really funny joke where some friends are talking and the whole time in the background on their computer, you see like an image being downloaded and you realize over the course of the scene that it's porn.
I realized immediately because I remember that pain. Hurry up.
And it's so funny because then the character's like, oh, we got a nipple. And then they all like stop their conversation.
Yeah, it's awesome for the most part.
Yeah, it's not like an amazing movie.
It doesn't come together. I think they make some really interesting choices that we can't really talk about here.
Yeah.
It's an A24 film. So I'm contractually, I have to say to go watch it according to most of the internet, just cause I wear that hat and I think I'm just like up A24's ass. It's not even a licensed hat. I got it on Redbubble. Like somebody literally just drew that on there.
Hell yeah.
It's more of a costume for me at this point, you know?
The Q&A for Y2K was pretty funny as well, because it was the MC, the South by Southwest MC, who's like always in charge of running the Q&As at the Paramount
Theater.
She's
the head of the film and TV division here.
Yeah. But you can tell like that, what was that, day two? Like,
yeah,
really, really late on day two. You could tell she was probably very tired, and like the cast was not giving her an inch of rope, because she would be like, I think she asked a question.
Everybody was being such a smart ass. Yeah.
Yeah. I think she asked Julian Dennison, how did you know that this certain part of your character would work out so well? And he's like, well, cause I read the script.
She's
you can almost see it on her face. Like, well, fuck you too, man. Yeah.
Come on, man. But we were loving it. That was almost the funniest part.
Oh yeah. Cause I also was like, that's a dumb fucking question.
And Kyle Mooney was, just not having it at all either and not giving her anything. And anyway, it was fun times.
Yeah.
I don't remember what else we saw that. Oh, Babes. We got to talk about Babes.
I'm
the world's biggest Alana Glazer fan, Broad City from way, way back. And if you wanted to see her character from Broad City, which is, I think I have a suspicion is just Alana Glazer. God, what a good movie. It's from Neon.
Yeah.
It's called Babes. It's like a raunchy comedy that's honest to a fault about all of the wonder of bearing children. And friend, it's a rom-com about friendship though, you know,
yeah.
About two besties having kids and
navigating life. The whole time I was watching it, I was in tears, both from laughing and actual tears, thinking about how much my wife is going to love this movie. Mm-hmm. She's the reason I'm such a big Broad City fan. She's the one that showed me the wonder that is that show, but also she knows a lot more about what it's like to be pregnant and, you know, all of the wonder of having a vagina.
Yeah. I really appreciated this movie. I feel like was, cause you know how movies are when it comes to pregnancy, they shy away from so many aspects so beautiful. Of pregnancy. Whereas this movie really leans in like, oh no, honey, they don't tell you about that.
Yeah. I'm shitting. Yeah.
You just shit on your baby.
Yeah. Honestly, if it's not still my favorite movie of the fest, it's up there for sure. I adore that movie. It's going to be my favorite thing in the world when it comes out. I'm going to show it to everybody. I love Alana Glazer. I don't think she gets enough work.
Oh yeah. She is so funny. I love her so much. And everyone in that cast is incredible. Like that's the first time I've seen several of them in movies before.
There's Michelle Buteau.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen her in anything before, but she was fucking hysterical.
Oh,
Hasan Minhaj.
Hasan Minhaj is in there as well.
And then, even the doctor, John, who was played by John Carroll Lynch.
His whole hair bit was funny.
Yeah. He that character goes on a journey with his hair throughout the whole entire movie and it never stops being funny.
It's true. It's the funniest. I'll say this, it might be a hyperbolic kind of hot take, but I think I can sincerely say it's the funniest movie I've seen in years. Mm-hmm. I laughed like the belly laughs, not the like intellectual, oh, that's clever, that's funny, but like actual hearty belly laughs. Mm-hmm.
I would agree.
It sounds like an interesting cereal. Have a bowl of hearty belly laughs.
Part of this balanced breakfast.
No, we're boycotting Kellogg's.
But yeah, I would agree with you. That was the most I've laughed in a theater, maybe since Barbie, but I think I laughed harder than I laughed in Barbie, mm-hmm. which is saying something because I was dying in Barbie when I saw it the first time.
Barbie was fun.
Yeah.
We missed the Oscars Sunday night.
We did.
To watch a movie called I Saw the TV Glow. Mm-hmm.
The second movie with Fred Durst. That's
right. The other movie with
the
Fred.
Other movie
I
with
never
Fred
told
Durst.
You the other one. Yeah.
That's the other movie with Fred Durst is I Saw the TV Glow.
Which you would have never guessed. Another movie from A24.
Honestly.
So they're both A24 films.
What is with A24 and Fred Durst?
I don't know. They love Limp Bizkit.
Are they doing it for the Nookie?
They're just rolling. I feel like. They but just kind of have faith.
To be fair, in Y2K, the joke is that it's Fred Durst, but in this
movie, he plays himself.
Yeah. But in this movie, like had they not said that was Fred Durst in the Q&A, I would never have thought that was Fred Durst.
Nope. Yeah. It's directed by Jane Schoenbrunn, who you might know from a little movie called We're All Going to the World's Fair. They have directed, I think, three feature films. And it's going to make a stir. You know, I think it, for me, if I was going to interpret it, it's kind of hard to, it stars Justice Smith. And if you wanted me to describe the plot to you, I would find that very difficult.
Yeah.
But it's very similar to Y2K at first glance. In the fact that there's a lot of like millennial nostalgia that drives it. It's about, you know, kids falling in love with like a Nickelodeon-esque TV show.
Like Are You Afraid of the Dark or Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Goosebumps maybe even. Kind of show that they bond, like two outcasts sort of bond over. But ultimately it's a film about finding out who you are. And specifically, I think the trans experience. Mm-hmm. It's a horror adjacent movie. It's, you know, filled with dread. It's dark imagery. It's very kind of David Lynchian. People are going to either love or hate it, but it's going to make a big stir. It's going to be an important movie this year. I missed it at Sundance, so I had to catch it here. So I was like, fuck the Oscars. I do highly recommend that. I have no idea when it's coming out. I think June or something. It'll be in theaters, probably a slow rollout that won't be playing in most cities at first, but catch it when you can, baby. I Saw the TV Glow. If you want to be cool, that's the movie this year. Cool. You know what I mean? Every year there's like did you see Bob? That's the movie this year.
Yeah. Cause it seems to be like when you watch, just based off the conversations we've had with other people around us, it seems like you either find this movie to be like transcendent, you know, one of the best movies ever. You really connect to it, or you just like, that was the thing that I respect, but I wish it was a little weird for me, you know?
Yeah.
I fall into that second camp personally.
All of my friends have rated it like 5 stars and seen it multiple, like saw it at Sundance and then caught it again here. And they're just having a great time with it. I mean, I think the camera work is gorgeous. And
yeah, the cinematography is amazing.
And the director has grown light years since We're All Going to the World's Fair. Other than that though, I think it missed me a lot of the time. I've still been kind of, but it's not the kind of movie you can just walk out and go, I know everything I think about that film.
Yeah, you have to marinate with it.
I mean, probably multiple viewings, and it's definitely worth seeing multiple times. It's not going to be for everybody, but again, it's this one of the special ones this year.
It's one of those movies that you walk, it's one of those horror films that are like, and it's because it is a horror adjacent, but it's one of those horror films. The best way I can describe it is that when you leave it, you just feel like, ugh, oh man, I feel terrible about life in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is good. You know,
it's an intentional choice.
That's my baseline
feel that way. Yeah.
So it's good to go back there after a brief respite with Babes.
I don't want to be happy too much.
Wasn't Babes the movie we saw before that?
Yeah. Or was it? No.
What do we watch on Sunday? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it didn't matter.
Something a lot happier. I also got to see a movie called Asriel that has no dialogue.
Oh, I didn't see this with you.
It's like a bunch of crunchy zombie type Satan worshipers with no dialogue, starring Samara Weaving from the writer who brought you Your Next, which I'm a big fan of. I'm not going to talk much about it because it's impossible to talk about because there's no dialogue. So everything I would say would be kind of a spoiler, but it's fucking dirty, graphic,
dirty,
interesting, transgressive. I really loved it. It's definitely not going to be for everybody, but I'm curious to know, like, what's your South by Southwest experience in general has been like so far. I mean, this is your first time in the city of Austin. Mm-hmm. You got my favorite ramen from last time. Well, from one of the times I was here recently.
Yeah.
That Elijah Wood told me about, which is such a douchebag sentence to say, but it's true.
Yeah. We went to Elijah Wood's favorite ramen place.
I met him at Fantastic Fest. I told you guys that story. And he was like, if you're hungry, man, there's a really, my favorite ramen place is around the corner. And like a nerd, I was like, I have to go to a restaurant recommendation from Elijah Wood.
Yeah, of course.
And then when we were standing outside the theater, I was like, Steve was like, I'm a hungry boy. And I said, ooh, I know what to do.
Follow me.
And you loved it.
I did. It was honestly the best ramen I've ever had. It's true. Elijah Wood has great taste.
I love that our mods to our show are like super well-traveled. And so when we posted that photo, Casey was like, oh, Tatsuya.
Yeah, she just knew just from the photo of us being there.
What's your experience been like? First time in Austin, first major film festival too, right? Like how you doing?
It's an interesting experience just because I think I'm going through the same level of stuff that you went through when you started going to these things where it's just like, man, I don't feel like I belong. I'm having some imposter syndrome. Like I feel like an outsider, but like, I love being part of the movies and just seeing all the, like, I love film festivals in general. Like I haven't been to one this big before. I've been to several others in the past, but I love
watching. You've been to a lot of cons and stuff. And I don't typically do that thing.
Yeah. I've been to a lot of that stuff, but I just love the scene of, you know, watching new movies and learning from other creatives and seeing what people who maybe don't have like a huge name yet, or they don't have studio backing. I love seeing the art style that they're going with. Cause you always learn from these things, no matter what. Like if you go see it, for me, at least if I were to like, oh, I really want to see Wonka at AMC and I go see Wonka at AMC.
Sure.
I have a fun time. Sure. But it's different than seeing it at a film festival. At a film festival, when you go to see a movie, it's almost like everyone around you are also cinephiles. They're also like keyed into everything. They're reacting to it very similar to you. And then at the end of it, typically there's a Q&A. You can hear from the filmmakers as to why they're making some of the choices. And it just kind of endears you to the project much more because it's a lot more personal. Having this experience, you have a more personal connection to these movies. And so that's why I love film festivals like this. And this has been really, really great for that as well. Cause you're just like, oh, cool. I get to see Nick Cage talk about being in a movie. That's wild.
Yeah. I think there's this thing, a lot of people, and this, I can really trace it back to like one guy, but a lot of people think influencers or critics that are up on the higher echelon will be paid or at the very least caught up in the hype when there's a big premiere. There's this like giant sect of people that are like, none of that's real. Every time they go to a premiere, they want to be invited back. So they give it a great review and they're not all the way wrong, but they're still light years off base because there is an element to a film festival environment or a premiere environment. And that's the whole point of the marketing, right? This is what they want to happen, mm-hmm. where you're watching it with a crowd of people who love movies, who are a little drunk. Everybody's hyped up. This is kind of a vacation for them. And that you get caught in that energy. And so you might enjoy a movie a little bit more than you normally would. And that happens all the time where I'll get home and watch it again months later. Oh, that's nowhere near as good when Haley Steinfeld's not sitting next to me. You know what I mean? Like, duh.
When was Haley Steinfeld sitting next to you?
Well, like 30 feet away, but it just felt so close.
She's in my eye line. This movie's way better with her in my eye line.
The aura, you know, just permeates.
You just feel it.
You know what I mean? Like there's an energy there that does get intoxicating. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that writing my Monkey Man review earlier where I was like, I'm grading this on a curve because I love Dev Patel so much and I know what he went through to make this movie.
Yeah.
And then I thought, and fuck you if you think that's wrong. Like art is not made in a vacuum. We don't have some kind of objective eye of Mordor with which to view these movies. Like it's all about the messy, the dirty, the way that 200 humans miraculously work together to cobble something that kind of makes sense into a story and try to affect somebody's life and help them in some way. And yes, make money, but also like it was just so important to these artists to get this done. Nothing's perfect. Like a song, even a house, like it's never done. You just stop working on it.
Right.
And you say, ta-da. And you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm making any sense now, but I felt like I should be grading it on a curve. And that's how I grade all movies. Cause I know they're hard to make and I try to see what it took to make it.
Yeah. I mean, we've been joking this whole week that like just being here and seeing these movies at South by Southwest is automatically giving the movie an extra half star or a full star. Just because the
In terms of Letterboxd ratings.
Because the atmosphere is just so infectious and wonderful to be a part of. Now you mentioned Monkey Man. Do you want to dip into our Monkey Man review? Monkey Man.
I was trying to save that for the climax. Cause that's kind of,
we can come back to it.
That's we're getting toward the climax. Like if this was a movie, this would be the peak of act two. we saw Monkey Man last night, which was my most anticipated movie of the fest. I think somewhere up there for Steve as well. I just, I love action films. I'm a huge fan of Dev Patel.
Love Dev Patel.
One of the last movies we saw together, because we don't watch movies together a ton in theaters, was another Dev Patel joint. Famously, Green Knight.
Oh, Green Knight. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
In the Green Knight, you were drunk, and that's where we got Candyman.
And
so last night, Steve goes, Monkey Man. So it's a full Dev Patel circle.
I was trying to get that going amongst everyone we were watching it with, but it didn't go.
But this is a movie produced by Jordan Peele, but co-produced by Dev Patel, written by Dev Patel, directed by Dev Patel, and starring Dev fucking Patel. This is a passion project, an idea that he initially had back in 2018. He tried to get Neil Blomkamp to direct it because they were in Chappie together, or Neil Blomkamp directed Chappie. And Neil said, you should just direct it. Mm-hmm. And it had never occurred to Dev to do that. And he mustered all of his courage and willpower and tried to put this movie together. He broke his foot. He ripped his shoulder. He broke his hand. Like in the first 2 days of production, he got an eye infection from a scene where they wrestle around on a bathroom floor. he imbued all of his love of Bruce Lee films and Bollywood films and the John Wick films and, Indian culture and, then it was shut down by COVID. He was just like, oh fuck, just a nightmare. Right. And Jordan Peele came along because that's his whole mission with Monkey Paw Productions is to lift up these young and up and coming genre filmmakers that have cultural stories to, I'm going to cry, that have cultural stories to tell. And he's like, no, fuck that, man. I'm going to help you finish this thing. And Dev ended up like using his cell phone for multiple sequences to shoot the shots. I mean, it's cobbled together. It's messy and dirty and gritty. It's a brawler that's filled with sweat and fluids of all kinds.
But so
it's
many got a fluids.
Pulsing, bloody heart. And I loved it. It's not perfect. I can't wait to watch it with subtitles because there's some thick accents in the movie. And of course, with the crowd roaring, doesn't make it easier, you know. But some really creative stunt work and choreography, some very interesting camera work, editing that I wasn't sure about, but Steve and I stayed up till 2 a.m. talking about it and kind of sold me on some of those choices. And I can't fucking wait for people to watch this movie, man.
Yeah. It's something special. Cause I know Dev was on the stage and he said he wanted to make an action movie that had the bite and the, the kicking of ass, as it were, as your favorite action movie, but also had some sort of heart and it meant a little something more than your average action film. And I think he 100% succeeds, even though the premise is fairly basic. Like, it's just, I want revenge for what people, someone did to me. Right.
Sure.
That's
a revenge thriller.
That's the basis of what it is. But the way he films it makes it much more impactful.
Killed his dog or something.
You killed John Wick's dog.
You killed Dev Patel's dog.
Oh no, Dev Patel's a sweetie. Why would you do that? You son of a bitch. But yeah, he injects so much heart and soul in this movie. And then when you watch, honestly, my favorite part about this movie was just being in that room full of people who were supporting him in mm-hmm. that moment. There's a moment where, you know, he comes out before the movie starts and he's very, you can tell he's super nervous because he probably finished this.
We just finished this cut like a week ago.
Yeah. And so he's probably like super nervous about how it's going to go. It's his first directorial debut. He took a real, you know, he bet on himself in a real big way because he's been trying to do action movies for so long, but they just didn't want someone who looked like him in an action movie.
Yeah.
So he said, fuck it, I'm going to make my own. And so you can tell it's meant so much to him before the movie started. The movie goes through, everyone's having a great time. Everyone's loving it. It's in the Paramount. So it's that big raucous Roadhouse style audience who's like cheering and laughing and just fully in. They're invested in this movie with him. And then when he comes out, something happened for at least the first time this whole festival. I don't know if it's happened anywhere else, but as far as I know, it's the only time it's happened where the whole entire 1200 seat audience gave him a standing ovation. And you can see he just was just wrecked with emotion.
Standing ovations are a thing at Cannes.
Yeah, they're not here.
At Sundance, not so much. South by Southwest, definitely not. You know, this was like our 12th movie and had never seen a single person stand up except to leave earlier because they wanted to beat the lines in the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, he got this raucous standing ovation. He bursts into tears and turns around.
Yeah.
And that's why I was choking up earlier because I was just remembering that moment and I wanted to film it because like fucking content.
I filmed it. I didn't intend to film that.
I was just
but
in it, man. Like,
I'm going to post it in our reels whenever I get a second to make our daily reel
keep
today.
Keep it real.
Because it was really just a beautiful moment because you could just see just how much that meant to him. And he's such an adorable guy because I think he was supposed to be the only one in the Q&A. He's like, I'm sorry, I can't do this. Like, I need my crew with me. And he pulled up like so much of the, or so many cast members and a couple crew members up on stage with him. And
Charlotte Copley's in the film.
Oh my God. I'm a huge Charlotte Copley fangirl.
Yeah,
so
Steve was
fangirling. I could have reached my hand out and touched him when he walked by.
It's not legal, but you should have.
Well, by the time I recognized that's who it was, he was like out of arm's length. But if I had my arm out, I would have touched him.
He would have brushed it.
God, I fucking love him so much. He's such a deep cut actor. I don't know if so many people know Charlotte Copley.
Yeah, he's from Hardcore Henry.
Hardcore Henry.
Free Fire, I think he's in that movie.
District 9.
District 9. Chappie.
The A Team.
I was about to get to the A Team. Yeah, man. Check it. Monkey Man comes out in early April and I go see it. Support Dev. Support Dev. I can't start a chant. It's a podcast. Nobody's actually here, but I tried.
That's such a good movie. It's got some brutal, there's some really gnarly fights in it that just make you go, I feel that.
Yeah, that's what I do. That's how I react.
Cause like I watch
violence.
Well, we watched all of Roadhouse, another action movie.
Yeah.
And there's fights and you know, they're fun, whatever, but I didn't have that.
Yeah.
Ooh,
it's
moment.
Too slick and clean. Like I said, it's the polar opposite of a movie like Monkey Man.
Yeah.
You know, he got down and dirty with that thing. And you can tell that's how you get wounded making a movie. It's putting your soul into it. I mean, he went Tom Cruise style, but he's not a Scientologist. He's just a sweetie.
He's just a big old sweetie.
So I'm really excited for the rest of his career. Thank you, Jordan Peele, for lifting that film up.
Yes, thank you.
It's pretty much the highlight of my Fest experience so far.
This episode was sponsored by BetterHelp. Folks, it's 2024. What does everybody do in the new year? They make resolutions. They set goals. How about we don't do that? I mean, you can. It's obviously nice to have goals, but it's also a good exercise to focus on things that you like about yourself. You know, not making all those high pressure goals that you might fail at and just feel worse. You can set smaller goals. And I think therapy can be a good way to access things that you enjoy about your life and focusing on the positive, the gratitude. And BetterHelp is is a good way to do that. If you've never given BetterHelp a try, it's therapy that's entirely online. You can do it all from your home and access a therapist by filling out a questionnaire. And if you end up not liking that therapist, you can switch. Again, along with the theme of this ad, no pressure whatsoever. They're not going to have their feelings hurt by it. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
.com/streamingthings.
Spring is just around the corner, ladies and gentlemen, so how about we spring into action and give a special shout out to all of the patrons who keep the lights on over here at Streaming Things. And I want to give a special shout out to our super patrons for the month of March. Thank you, Stanton Valentino, Mattelstat, Bryce Coppin, Susie Callahan, Anthony Corona, Sunshine, Huckleberry Cauliflower, Ashley Hazen, Mike from New Hampshire, Brett X, Emily Scarano, Lil Tickler, Svento 7, Jay Scramo, Blothpum, AK Ashley Ray, Adam Busby, Wendy O'Loughlin, Jason Hawkins, Big Butthorn, Conrad, Kaylee Sampson, Rabbit Dog in a Barbie Car, Charlie Friday, Alexis Adler, Peaches, Emmy, Haley B, Joe Velez, John Collins, Amanda King, Trisha Bueller, Sun Loving Mortal, Suzanne Rode, Jen Robinson, Kalisha Reeves, Aaron Armstrong, Kevin Strother, Ashley Powers, Stephen V, Casey McCain, and Enza. Thank you all so much for supporting Streaming Things, and let's get back to the show.
I feel like if we're transitioning to another movie, I think we do have to talk about one other one that we haven't talked about yet.
Okay.
Ghostlight.
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 A profound experience for me. Another movie that I missed at Sundance and was almost didn't go see. Steve kind of forced me. He's like, "Now we plan to go. We're not doing anything." I'm like, "Okay, whatever."
I honestly
get exhausted at these things and I'm just like start knocking things off my schedule left and right.
So I'm going to be honest. This is kind of funny that you said that because I'm going to be honest with you. I had zero interest in seeing Ghostlight.
Really?
And then the day before, because the way this festival works is you have to wake up at like 8 a.m. because at 8 o'clock, tickets go, like you can get these express tickets that guarantee you a seat in the theater. But if you don't get them, then you have to wait in line for hours and just hope you get in.
Yeah.
So it's this mad dash at 8 a.m. to try to secure your spot in the film. And so we always get together.
If we don't have press tickets set aside, which correct. For this one, we did not.
Correct. And so the night before we kind of try to like, "Oh, I'm going to see this. What are you going to see? What are we going to see here?" And you were like, "Let's go see Ghostlight." I'm like, okay. I don't have
much. Sure.
I don't have anything else to do during that block. Sure. I'll go. And then the next day you were like, "I'm not feeling like going." I'm like, "No, we got the tickets. Let's go." And so we went. I had no idea what this movie was before.
And I don't even want to tell anybody because I didn't even know either. It's loosely related to a production of Shakespeare, but there's like a big emotional through line that I wasn't aware of that hit me like a ton of bricks,
yeah,
as the expression goes. So I'll leave that for you to experience. Just know that I was a fucking mess,
yes,
throughout the entirety of this movie. I didn't know Weeping. Steve and everybody around me could see. But they could because they checked on me afterward. I mean, weep, not like, like every now and then, most of the time when I cry a lot.
You didn't notice me crying?
I did not.
I was
doing the thing,
the little like shakes where you're like,
yeah, because it was like, it wasn't like tears falling like a gentleman, you know,
like, see, looks like rain today. It's not raining inside, Chris. Yes, it is.
No, this was like, you know, but without the moan, because that would be rude in the theater. But if I wasn't.
Can you imagine if that was a person's actual reaction watching a movie that said, sir, I know you're going through something right now, but.
Yeah, I mean, it just hit different. Adore that. It'll be in my top 10 of the year. I can't imagine it won't.
Yeah.
This is the most like amazing year for movies ever.
It might be my favorite move. I might be the best movie of the festival for me. Like, I don't know if it's my favorite, but I think it's like the best. Cause so much of it, I'm gonna be honest, a lot, like every single actor in that movie I've never heard of before. And I walked away from that movie thinking, like, especially, the lead, it's an actor named Keith Kapferer. I hope I'm saying that right.
Probably not.
But like all of them was just like jaw droppingly, like, they're all amazing actors. I'm just like, wow, how have I never seen you in anything? Cause that was fucking astounding.
Crushed it. Mm-hmm. The emotion from these relative unknowns, just stellar.
Yeah.
Yes. Can't recommend it highly enough. And I only saw it because at Sundance, I was with Dave Chen, host of the Filmcast periodically. Mm-hmm. And he went to see it and came back when we were at a movie together later that day and said, oh, Ghostlight's amazing. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. Nerd. And
fucking nerd.
When I saw it on the roster here, I remembered Dave Chen's recommendation and said, sure, I'll put it on the schedule. That's why I was going to knock it off the list. Cause it was like, I didn't know much about it other than that one guy I really respect enjoyed it. But I went on his word and just had like this visceral transcended experience. So shout out to Dave Chen for that one. Cause he was pretty cash about strongly recommending it. He was like, it was really great. And you know, that was all I said. But he should have leaned more into that because that was wildly amazing. Mm-hmm, so anyway, fun times.
And then the one other movie I saw that you didn't get to see, we referenced it a little bit, but it stars Nicolas Cage. It's a movie called Arcadian. It's a fun little sci-fi movie. I don't know if it's amazing. It's good. It's a fun time. But the reason why I say it's not amazing is because it's basically A Quiet Place, but without the hook of people having to be quiet. It's just the same premise, but it's just normal monsters.
These monsters don't hear specifically well.
Yeah. They're just, hey, we're monsters. We want to eat you. And there's no real like hook to it. So it's like that same exact plot almost, but, minus that interesting layer to it. It's like a worse or not worse. That sounds mean. It's a lesser Quiet Place, but it's still fun. Nicolas Cage is great as always. The two boys, so it's the main characters are his sons and Nicolas Cage is also in it, but his sons are played by Jaden Martell and Maxwell Jenkins. Jaden Martell actually was also in Y2K. So it's the second movie with him at this festival that we got to see. But the funny thing about this story, the reason why I bring it up is so the Q&A ends, or I'm sorry, the movie ends and the Q&A starts and everyone's like, where's Nicolas Cage? Where is he? And the director goes up and he's like, all right, I guess it's time. You guys want to see the cast? And everyone's like, yeah. And he's like, okay, let's bring him out. And then he and the moderator look to the left of stage and nothing's happening. And then the director's like, where are they? And there was literally no joke, a solid 7 minutes of like, where'd everyone go? And then at one point, the young girl who's in it, who plays Charlotte, Sadie Soverall, comes out and she kind of wanders out by herself and like, where's everyone else? And she's like, oh, they had to go to the bathroom. And so everyone's just kind of waiting around.
My headcanon is that Nicolas Cage talks in the third person and he went to his like handler, you know, and they were like, you gotta be on stage. And he went, no, Nicolas Cage has to poo. and all the other Cage actors were like, they can't yell at him. So let's all go.
Tell him Nicolas Cage has to blow it up. But yeah, then he like comes marching out from this. He's the first one out there. And he's like, hey, everybody. Like,
sorry about that.
Sorry.
And then at my age, you really can't trust any farts.
You really can't. But then later on in the evening, when we were in line for Monkey Man, one of the boys who plays the son, Maxwell Jenkins, it's like his first big movie. And it was really funny because his agent was kind of hanging out with us.
I wish his name was Leroy Jenkins.
Leroy Jenkins. But we were also, it was like you, me, a bunch of other TikTok people were hanging out. Sydney, Cinema Joe was there.
Jay Stoobs.
Was Straw Hat there?
Yeah.
Yeah, Straw Hat was there. We're all just kind of hanging out and the agent comes by and he had overheard me telling you about Arcadia.
Yeah.
And I guess in his mind that made him think, oh, these content creators saw Arcadia.
Arcadian, right?
Arcadian, sorry. Yeah, Arcadian. So they probably want to talk to one of the actors for content, right? But I was literally the only one out of all of them who had seen it. So when he comes bringing this kid up here, he's like, hey, here's one of the actors for this movie. You guys want to talk to him? And I'm like, oh, hey, man, how's it going? So I started talking to him just naturally because I had seen the movie. But then everyone else turned away.
Cool.
And it was this weird thing where I was like separated from everyone because he and his mom are in between you guys. And I was like in a corner, like, I can't get out of this.
I know. I saw you back there, but it was so crowded because I got trapped.
You got trapped against the corner too.
Yeah. I tried to go say hi to Steven Weintraub from Collider and then he was, I don't want to say weird, but he was like tired and was fucking with me, which I didn't expect. I just wanted to shake his hand, say, hey man, good to meet you. And he was like, cause Perry Nemiroff is his colleague, who's amazing. One of the smartest, nicest people I've ever met. Not saying that he's not smart or nice, but it was just a different vibe. You know, I went to shake his hand and he fist bumped me. Like stubbornly, like just to fuck with me.
You were just telling me about the fist bump versus handshake thing the day before.
And I was stuck.
Oh no.
So this time
you don't relent.
I usually don't, but in this situation, it took me aback. I switched to a fist bump and then I was like, hey man,
hey, man.
You know, fan of your work. And he said, what work or some shit like that. And I was like, I know who you are. And I just wanted to say, you're doing a good job. And he was like, won't you tell that to my boss? You know, it was just kind of like a weird interaction. And then he was like, I'm fucking with you. I'm really tired. And I was like, I can tell on both those counts, you know, but then the crowd is so tightly packed that I'm stuck in that situation. Yeah. I can't like get away without going, excuse me, you know, without making a scene.
Yeah. So and there's also like a cement block between you and me as well. It was weird. And like, did I tell you this part? So I'm talking to this young actor who did an amazing job in Arcadian. So if that's like his first big movie, like that kid's going
places.
He's going places.
He's only really talented. One Red Bull.
Yeah. So I'm talking to him and what I think is his agent, but over the course of the conversation, I realized, oh, that's his mom. And at one point, you know, he's telling me all the stories and he was very friendly. He's, you know, we're having a great conversation back and forth. And then at one point his mom goes like, hey, you got a lot of press tomorrow. You got to save your voice. And I kind of like look at the two of them like, oh, I'm sorry. I'll stop talking to your kid. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
He's trying to be nice anyway. Like we're all standing here together.
I mean, he's no fucking Nicolas Cage. I can turn around any more than I want. But then I was just kind of laughing. I don't want this to come off as like making fun of him or anything. Cause I think he's a lovely person, but it kind of reminded me like, even movie star kids are kids. Cause he's like, he's sitting in the line, like, man, I need a Red Bull. And it's like 9 at night. And his mom turns around and goes, you can have one.
Who needs more than one? First off,
I just thought that was so funny. I was like, oh yeah, I get it, man. I had a mom like that too.
Who needs more than one at 9 o'clock at night? Yeah. It's been an interesting experience. I do want to close with this lovely story of what happened to me.
Well, before you close.
Open.
There's one thing we have to do before we close.
Party?
I have solicited questions from the listeners of Streaming Things on our Discord.
Unbeknownst to me.
Unbeknownst to you, I asked them. So if you become a patron at Streaming Things or patreon.com/streamingthings at the appropriate tier, you can have access to the Discord where sometimes I will ask questions that can be read on the podcast.
And there are members in there that have been to every good restaurant in the world.
There sure are. So a couple people sent us some questions. The first one comes in from our beloved Enza. Let me pull it up real quick.
Enza
asks, what is the high and what was the low of South by Southwest so far?
I've never recorded a podcast laying on a bed before.
Is this a high?
So this is the highest high.
Do you feel so comfy right now?
Does it sound okay still?
It sounds great.
Yeah, it's just me chilling.
Yeah, usually we're sitting at a table, but now I have our mics on like little mic sticks. So
I'm literally laying in a bed staring at Steve.
I'm on top of him.
Talking sultrily. Is that a word? To it my is. Listeners. That's the high. But also I would say a second high would be the standing ovation for Dev Patel and watching him burst into tears.
Yeah, that was definitely a high.
My lowest low was the story I'm about to tell. I was about to tell you anyway.
Do you want to save it?
No, I think it's time.
It's time? Okay.
It's time. The kind of thing that many listeners think I should keep to myself.
But
I'm not going to.
Most of the listeners eat it up.
Well, not in this context. It's not a good thing to do. So Steve's fucking gone somewhere yesterday. I don't remember when. And I've been exhausted. Like I'm sleeping 5 hours a night. I don't do well when I travel. Like I'm a very routine person. So my whole body is out of whack and I've been eating like shit. I haven't exercised and I'm in this elevator going up. Our hotel is on the 11th floor. Or our room is on the 11th floor of this giant hotel. And I get in the elevator and I accidentally rip a huge fart. You know,
accidentally.
It wasn't on purpose.
You're hot boxing that elevator, you monster.
And it smells horrendous because I'm not living well. It's not my fault.
Yeah, we're eating like shit out here.
And so, I mean, we're getting like 2 a.m. whole pizzas and that's it. Yeah. You know, and then
maybe 2 bottles of water for the whole day.
So I'm like, this elevator is cooked for at least 20 minutes.
Especially if that door keeps closing.
But luckily I'm alone and hopefully it'll clear out because there's 3 elevators on this side of the building alone. And suddenly, as I think that, and right at the peak of the smell, the doors open and there's a beautiful woman standing there that goes, "Oh, hi," and walks in. I don't even know what floor it is. I assume it's my floor because I had just pressed the button and zoned out and farted and waited. And I go, "Hi," and run because I don't want to be there when she goes, "Oh my God," or quietly wrinkles her nose and stares at me. You know, I just don't want to go through that. I don't have the emotional stability to withstand that in this moment.
You dashed.
So I fled. I literally ran. She saw that. And so,
and she smelled her, that.
Her experience of the situation is just smelling that and then seeing me running. So I run.
You are the literal manifestation of the cartoons when they like sprint, but they leave a little cloud.
Yeah. So our room number is 1122. I book around the corner. I get to 22. The door's open. I had spoken to the hotel staff earlier because they weren't able to clean the room because you were a sleepy boy.
I was.
And I assumed that they were doing the cleaning now. So I walk in there. The maid is in the middle of cleaning. And I go, "Oh, sorry." And she is terrified. I startle her. I don't think I still stink. I think I left all of that in the elevator.
Oh, one can hope.
And she says, and she panics. She looks like I asked for her purse with a gun and look and says, "I'm so sorry. I don't speak any English." And I said, "That's okay. I'm leaving," which I don't know why Americans do that. Like they just talk slower in a language people slower don't and understand. Louder. Yeah. And then she starts.
You went full Carol May in the Chipotle line, yeah. right there.
She starts rattling off in her language and I in a panicked way. And I just started backing out like Homer Simpson into the bushes. And when I made it into the hallway, I glanced to my right and it says 422. I'm not on my floor. I'm just 7 levels away from it.
You busted into the wrong ass room.
I'm literally in a room that nobody's, you know, renting right now. And that's why she's so weirded out and scared.
They told me you were like gone. Why are so you here?
I didn't tell you this part. I pointed at the room number and then like slapped my head and then she laughed and said, "Oh," you know, and like she understood that. And then I ran again. And so it was like the roughest 4 minutes.
And that's why you never trust a fart.
Ever. And I think about that poor woman a lot. Like, did I ruin her whole day?
She's dead.
I went back downstairs later and there was a body bag near the elevators.
Conor McGregor had to escort her to an ambulance. She passed out.
That's my low. That's my long story. What about you, Steve?
Oh gosh. High. Same thing as you, Dev Patel. My low.
Ellie.
Honestly, yeah, it's probably been a low, low for me. Erica's watching my dogs, and apparently Ellie's being an absolute bitch.
Yeah.
So I'm over here freaking out, feeling real bad that Erica's having to deal with her own life issues and also my crazy ass dog that likes to be a menace.
I've been a good boy, Daddy.
I've been a baby angel. Pippa the dog would never be mean to his mummy. Okay. Next question comes in from Brenda Bren. What's something you experience, whether positive or negative, that you don't hear people talking about? It's kind of interesting.
Well, my fart. Nobody's talking about that.
People are saying.
I don't know what no one's talking about. Well, We Were Dangerous is a big thing that there's not a lot of buzz for that I'm aware of that we're trying to make happen. In fact, we should like include the audio to that interview or something.
Oh gosh.
If that's possible.
It's possible. It'll just take more time. Yeah,
somehow. Cause I don't think it could be its own episode. So I don't know what to do, but somehow. But anyway, what else do you think no one's talking about?
I can put it up on Patreon.
Velvet Taco.
The taco place we just had?
Nobody's talking about it. No one's talking about it. I've had it twice. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I had it this morning with you.
What about
you,
that, Casey? You've been there?
She probably has.
Probably.
She's probably like, yeah, noobs.
I want to go to Voodoo Donut, but I don't want to feel like a more of a piece of shit.
Hey, that's a Portland thing.
Apparently. We found that out. People are very passionate about that. What about you? What's something no one's talking about that we haven't talked about yet?
Well, something we literally haven't talked about is Three Body Problem. We saw that show.
Positive or negative.
We saw that movie.
Neither of us liked it.
It was the first episode of the guys from Game of Thrones, D.B. Weiss, the Double D's.
Dan Benioff.
I can't remember their actual names. I just call them the
D&D.
D&D. Yes, that movie was...
And it stars Liam Cunningham from Game of Thrones, and it stars Benedict Wong, and it's got...
I love Benedict Wong.
Ramin Djawadi, the composer from Westworld and Game of Thrones.
It's got a great cast.
A very highly praised trilogy of books, I think, like a deep sci-fi mystery kind of thing. It's just not my thing anyway, but I also think it was a pretty terrible pilot. It's not even a pilot. It's not the kind of episode that is going to rope you in. But Steven Weintraub said he's seen the entire show and it's fucking amazing and definitely watch at least the second episode. And I'm like, I don't believe you.
Yeah. I mean, when we left, I think I told you like I was willing to watch episode two, but if by the end of episode two, it didn't have me, I would abandon it completely because that first episode was just kind of like,
it's whatever. Way more your kind of thing and you still aren't sold.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely like, fuck this. Mm-hmm. But I was also very tired when I watched it. That was day one.
That was day one. We woke up at like 3-4 in the morning, traveled all day, watched a bunch of movies. It was the last thing we saw. Yeah. It was a rough time. Maybe giving it a second chance when we're healthier and more vibrant.
Agreed.
Just Liz asks, was it worth missing the Star Wars trivia? It was, but I'm very sad about it.
Aww.
Because we've been doing trivia in Discord.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to any of those because I'm a real piece of work.
Were you or Kit? Oh, this is from Bluffpum. Were you or Kit the little spoon at the hotel?
We have, I'm very sad to report, separate beds.
And I was the little spoon.
We pushed them together and made Steve the little spoon.
He keeps trying to tell me to go to my own bed, but in the middle of the night, I'm like, I threw up. And he lets me in.
He says, I froed up.
Here we go. Casey is asking, what is the best food so far?
That Tatsuya is the best food I've ever had in Austin, but I didn't eat that here this time. So I'm going to go with...
That's mine.
Velvet Taco. We're planning on going to Terry Black's barbecue tomorrow and that will be number one.
Can I be honest with you?
Sure.
I was very scared about the food situation in Austin the first 2 days we were here.
Cause we had that Ironworks barbecue place.
Yeah. So we landed, everyone's like, oh man, it's awesome. We got to have barbecue. Let's go. So we went to this barbecue place and it was
mid.
It was the middest of mids. And then we went to a couple other places and like, they like messed up my order. And we went to that taco place at, the place above, what was it? Caroline.
Yeah.
And that was just kind of like, whatever. And I'm just like, man, is this,
you really like the walking taco though?
Yeah. But it's a fucking walking taco.
Like, yeah.
That's not, I can make that.
Yeah.
Just you open up a bag of Fritos, pour some chili in there, done.
Yeah.
So I was really worried about it, but thankfully the last couple of days have been much better on the food front for sure.
Yeah, there's some really good food here.
Bluffpum also asks, did you get any neat swag to keep?
We're about to go. That's one of the plans for today is to check out the merch at the convention. Mm-hmm. We got the Three Body Problem helmets.
Yeah, that's probably the coolest thing.
A couple tote bags.
I'll put a photo of it in the Discord so you guys can see what it looks like. It's a very weird little VR looking helmet. They gave it to the whole audience with the intention of doing like a big,
they did the mass photo and it turned out well.
We left before they did that. We're like, fuck this.
I'm a CB boy. And we got pizza.
Yeah. Pizza. Mm. A lot of these questions are just kind of funny. I don't think we're expected to really answer. Like,
you guys, take us seriously.
Ricker asks, were you perceived?
Not yet. No, not yet.
Not really.
I've skipped all of the after parties because I'm old and lame. Mm-hmm. I might go to the Immaculate after party tonight.
You can be perceived by Sydney Sweeney.
I need a selfie with the Sweenster.
The Sweens.
We're supposed to do press line coverage and red carpet, but I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be seeing Fall Guy. You're supposed to be doing whatever Steve does.
Yeah. I didn't get tickets to Fall Guy, so I was just going to hang.
Low to the left.
Yeah, you know, baby.
You're going to be hanging in here.
Joey, why can't you tell the difference between a sunrise and a sunset? We'll get into it later, Joey. Did you fly Oceanic? No, we flew Delta. Let's see. Did you find anyone else with 9 toes? Unfortunately not.
He hasn't been comparing piggies with strangers yet, though. Maybe that's what he's going to do while I'm watching Fall Guy.
Let me block that hour in my day.
Just hang them out the window.
What's in the box?
Still haven't found out.
Erica writes, are you coming back the same or were you forever changed?
Answer that. She's talking to you.
Oh, she's talking to me. The same.
I'll be forever tired. It feels like.
Yeah. I feel like when we get home, as I'm saying this to you, I'm like hunched over, like I'm dying. So I think whenever we get home, I'm just going to like sleep for a couple days straight. That might be the
move. She's like, no, the fuck you're not.
No, you're not, motherfucker. Take this crazy ass dog.
I think, you know, I'm always a little changed by, I know you don't want me to answer that seriously, but I'm always a little changed.
Why wouldn't I want you to answer that seriously?
The question asker probably did not intend that, Erica, but maybe she did. She's very sincere. I think I'm always a little changed, and there's definitely been some slightly life altering things occurring. I have an agent now has nothing to do with this trip. It would have occurred anyway, but by the way, none of you asking these questions are allowed to actually talk directly to me anymore. I'm supposed to go through my agent, but I'm just going to allow it. Cause you didn't know.
There's your one warning. you can talk to me though. I don't have an agent. I'm a loser.
Pippin's your agent.
You have to talk. Direct all feedback to me, Pippin the dog. My client at least deserves 70%. All right, fine, 30. Pippin, you're terrible at this.
I'm sorry.
I'm just a dog.
Are any more questions?
No, that concludes all the questions.
Got any more brain busters?
No, all the brains have been busted.
So tonight,
we answered the other questions that were there.
We're seeing Fall Guy-ish, and we're seeing Immaculate, the new Sydney Sweeney film from Neon. Tomorrow there's Omni Loop with Iowa Debris. We didn't get passes or anything. Who knows what's going to happen? We're ready to come home.
Yeah, we're all.
We miss you guys.
We miss you all.
But it's been a wonderful journey. And honestly, as you guys know, or hopefully you know, you're the ones that made this possible.
Absolutely.
It is with Patreon money that all of this was possible. We could have never afforded this on our own.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
So, wow. Hopefully more opportunities like this occur in the future, but also thank you. Even if it never does, you changed my life. I love you so much. Thank you for all your support. Even if you're not a member of the Patreon, thank you for listening. That is so helpful. You have no idea. I hope you're looking forward to the Fallout coverage. I hope you're looking forward to the prequel Star Wars trilogy dropping soon. And The Boys season 4 and House of the Dragon season 2. If not, it's probably not the show for you. But we're glad you're here anyway. But that's all the time we've got right now. We've got to go return some videotapes in Austin. My name is Kit.
Pew! And my name is Steve. Sorry, I don't have the soundboard with me.
It worked. They never would have noticed.
Yeah, they never would have guessed.
And this was Streaming Things. Happy streaming. So I'm here with the filmmakers behind We Were Dangerous, which I actually got to watch earlier today. Fantastic movie. Congratulations. Thank you. And thank you so much for spending the time to talk with me. I really enjoyed my time with that. And I do want to ask up front, just get it out of the way to make sure that I'm pronouncing your names correctly for later. I'm not even going to try. I'll just start to let you go. I know it's Josephine, Maddie, and Morgan, but that's the last names I want to make sure of.
It's Maddie Dye.
Maddie Dye.
Mm-hmm. Josephine Stewart Tiffew.
Tiffew. Okay, yeah, see, I would have never.
Phew, thank God that's over.
Okay.
Morgan Waru.
Waru. With a little
roll.
Water?
Yeah.
Okay. That's it. Water. Okay. Yeah. There we go. Nailed. Got that out. So I wanted to add, and anybody can jump in at any time, where because I know that you know, you're director, co-writer, and then
I'd say additional writer, okay.
Screenwriter.
Okay. And writer. Well, credit Stu, you know
what I mean? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So where would you think, because while I was watching it, I was thinking tonally, I mean, this is a masterwork, because I mean it's there's a lot of insidious goings on in this film, and yet the movie's pretty hilarious a lot of the time, or at least I thought it was. Like lines like what was it that crushed me? I had to stop the movie for a second. Oh, it was the peanut butter. When they said, "Do you have any non-poison peanut butter?" And he said, "Well, not on me." Didn't want any mix-ups, you know. And I was like, "Oh my God!"
That's really a thing that they did. On this island near Wellington, they poison all the peanut butter to kill all the rats.
Yeah. Really? I guess that
would be
effective.
No, I didn't invent nothing. Just so you know, it's actually really smart way to get rid of them.
Everybody likes peanut butter.
Totally.
They would get me if you poisoned it. I would be done.
You'd be done.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you got that tone, you know, that it was really tricky and Josephine did a really beautiful
It's such
job.
A good scene. My favorite line that Maddie did in that scene where she's like, "Do you think rats go to heaven or just pets and stuff?" Like, I love that she says that to Barry.
There's a lot of little jokes, I think, that, like, on successive rewatches, it's the kind of my favorite kind of movie where you notice different things and you get an extra chuckle because there's another layer to it, especially with the matron's character. I can imagine that I'm interested in the casting process because, again, she specifically is a character who's quite funny. Mm-hmm. Because of the way that you portray her, you know, she misquotes things. She's slightly off. Her belief system is ridiculous. And so it's funny, but also it's insidious, right?
Yeah, and she's very earnest in her belief.
Yes. Yeah. So I was curious about, was that casting process difficult? Did you have somebody in mind? Was it always Rima?
Always her to me.
Okay.
She didn't know this.
Yeah.
We did audition a number of really talented actors, actually. We've got phenomenal actors in New Zealand. So it was hard. But she's an icon in our screen industry and our theatre industry back home. And when I read Maddie's script, she was all I could think of reading it. I was even like, "Did you write this for Rima Tiwiata?" "No, you're thinking of a different actor. I know who you're thinking of." But for me, it was always Rima. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I thought...
And she's naughty and she's fun.
Yeah.
She improvises a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So she ad-libs on top of, like, you know, a joke that Maddie's written. She'll do the joke and then she'll top it somehow with her own little flourish or line or word.
The
she's genius.
The lemons crushed me.
So good.
She was that in the Bible, you know?
Yeah. And then,
that whole bit, like, that's one of the many things that that's my kind of humor.
Yeah.
I grew up on Monty Python, and Taika Waititi was an executive producer, right?
Great.
So What We Do in the Shadows is very near and dear to me. In fact, when Steve and I met, the guy behind the camera, we called him Stu, which is
the... Oh, really? Damn, Steve, don't let them treat you like that.
Because he's such a good guy. That was the running bit.
He's a good guy.
So for years, we called him Stu. And even we have a podcast, and his name was Stu in parentheses on the show notes for years. So anyway, I love
Steve,
that kind of humor.
I treasure you.
Yeah. We stand, Steve.
You do. Like the bit where she says... "Oh, I never found out what happened to Jesus."
You know? Yeah, so
love
good.
Love that stuff.
So good.
So, where that was leading me, I don't recall.
Keep it. I think there's no question at the end of this.
Oh, the structure of the script. That's where I was going with that. Because, you know, there's the... I wonder what you were thinking, or did you try different things as far as with narration, without narration? Because that helps the tone a lot, because it gives it kind of, I don't want to say whimsical, but it's got this almost Roald Dahl kind of fable vibe. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Was that always the idea, or did that come in later?
Yeah, the script always did have narration. Mm-hmm. What changed was that, it wasn't always the matron who was the narrator. But, I mean, we we always just kept coming back to the matron. Like, we always just, I felt like as we were, like, I don't know, working on it, we just, like, loved the matron and wanted to know more about her. I mean, she is sort of, like, the great tragedy. She is sort of, like, the example of these institutions, like, manifest in a human and, like, someone who, like, so desperately wants and needs to think of herself as good and, like, in heaps of ways wants the girls to be reformed because she wants to, like, prove it's possible for herself. Mm-hmm. And so in that way she became, like, a really useful lens because she had, like, kind of embodied all the colonial narratives and all the, like Christian white narratives so fully. And so she, like, yeah, because we're, like, looking at a period that's, like, I mean, more than 100 years after New Zealand was colonized, and it's, like, now it exists in the people and the institutions and, like, all the structures. But she, yeah, because she gets stuff wrong, and she's funny, and she's earnest, and, like, I think that her viewpoint and her lens is useful for a narrator because it's, like, both deeply true and deeply subjective.
Mm.
I thought it was a genius ploy because it's through her narration that a lot of the themes really become
explicit.
Yeah.
And but also a lot of the jokes get kind of really subtly woven in there because you know her perspective. So I was curious about that because that's probably not a choice that I would have thought of. But that's why I'm sitting on this side of the table.
Well, I mean, no, it wasn't my idea either. But when someone suggested it, I was like, why didn't we not think about it?
To be honest, it wasn't mine. Yeah. It was another New Zealand filmmaker who was like, what if?
Who's that?
And we went, oh, we should try that.
I love that. The collaboration all around.
A nationwide collaboration.
Yeah, it was
a nationwide collaboration.
It's like when George Lucas made Star Wars, you know, and Brian De Palma told him about the you should have an opening crawl that explains this stuff. You know, that was never his idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just happens all the time. You need your filmmaker buddies to help.
Yeah, you really do.
It's a communal thing.
Even George.
Especially George.
It's the way you approach the edit. It's really, like, organic 100%. And, like, looking at the story and all the pieces.
Otherwise you get so lost in it. And
You
have to ask your trusted mates, like, come in, have a watch, be honest. What am I missing here? You know?
Did you use, it was a lot of natural light. Am I correct in that?
Yes and no. So there were, like, diffs on set. Mm-hmm.
And there was actually, like Marionettes did an amazing job of making lights look natural.
Correct.
Yeah, you fooled me.
Exterior we had, I mean, apart from the night shoots, but, yeah, we didn't have a lot of light. We were mostly shooting in natural light, actually, now that I think about it. We dipped some stuff. Unless we needed to cheat time of day.
Right.
We'd build something so it looked sunrise or sunset.
Yeah. But I think specifically I was looking at a scene. I think it was Nellie or Louisa in the little bunker.
That was all lit. Yep.
And yeah, it just looked like sunlight coming in. So well done. Yeah. So well done.
The classroom scenes lit. She does an amazing job working with natural light and then making all studio lighting look natural.
Yeah.
A phenomenal job.
Yeah.
Do you find that it's a struggle to film sad movies or horror films in New Zealand because it's too beautiful?
It's also hard as it
can be. I mean, famously, New Zealand for a long time had, like, a cinema of unease, like, just really dark,
like, quite brutal, very bleak films.
Yeah.
But when you're in New Zealand, you don't see it as beautiful as when, you know, overseas people can really perceive it as incredibly beautiful.
Yeah, as an American of a certain age, it's Lord of the Rings, and we're all like, where is that?
It's confirmation bias. Yeah. You're like, oh, it's gotta be beautiful. Yeah, and then you're just like, anything's it's like a grass hill.
Yeah,
and
exactly. I'm
like, they're like, no, they should. That's what we've done. Morning. We've brainwashed you.
We were like, I think it's the light. Like, the position of New Zealand on the planet. Oh my God, I'm going to sound like I know what I'm talking about, but I actually have no idea because I'm not a scientist.
No,
but do you think? Like, because New Zealand is, like, low on the globe in the sun.
I'm with you.
Like, I actually really reckon this is true, but just from going and, like, coming back.
There's a different quality of light in the bottom of the southern hemisphere than there is up
in Texas.
Where you guys are.
Well, I'm from Kentucky. It's not even Texas. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the light like there?
Kentucky.
But so is it like this?
Yeah. Mitch McConnell.
Painting.
unfortunately, yes.
Is this what it's like?
No. It's a lot. It's more mud, less cows, where I live specifically.
See, because if I saw something like this, or like when I went to Joshua Tree, right? And
sure.
I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. This is the most beautiful thing I've seen. Because we don't have stuff like that back home.
I get what you mean. It's striking differences.
It's so beautiful.
But
it's
I think so the cool. world does agree on certain places. That's why we all travel there.
Yeah, you should. And keep on coming.
New Zealand, I've been wanting to go for my whole life, ever since Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Isn't it true that you have every type of climate there?
Yeah, that is true.
Like mountains, that is true.
Beaches. It's just
tropical, subtropical.
But Australia didn't get any of that. And they should have, because the light theory, though, that's what
And we don't have things that can kill you.
Yes, no giant
no
bird-eating spiders.
Just earthquakes.
That's fine. Just earthquakes and volcanoes.
Oh, okay. Those are fun, though.
But, like, no animals, insects that can kill you.
Yeah.
It's pretty lovely.
Yeah. Love this little tourism, man.
Speaking of that area of the hemisphere, I was watching the movie, and there was a mention when they find the liquor, they say, no, we can drink it. It's like Vegemite, right? And we have a podcast, and we have some Australian listeners. And they sent us Vegemite recently to try.
Yeah. I'm a Marmite girl.
To be honest, I have Vegemite pretty much every morning.
Really?
Yeah. And I have to, there's like one supermarket.
I prefer Marmite.
I'm interested what your question is.
I'm really, so Vegemite ... question mark is the question.
Yeah, okay.
Like, why did you all do that?
They told us we used too much.
Yeah,
that's why we didn't like
it. You need like toast, like tons of butter. Hot so it melts, and then just a little, it's just a kiss.
Tab.
Yeah, just a tiny
of umami.
Thin little squid.
We'll try it. You kind of liked it, didn't you?
I did like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you layer it on, that is way too much.
Yeah, I go like peanut butter.
No.
Oh, yeah, I found out.
Yeah. That's why you know that it has an infinite shelf life, because the one little jar can last you ages.
Well, I just kind of, when it came up in the movie, I felt proud, you know, because most Americans, they'd be like, I don't get it, but I was like, I do get it.
I get it. I understand this concentrated yeast extract reference. I mean,
that's right. We also had...
So niche.
What was it, Tim Tams?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, did you?
Yeah, lots of Tim Tams.
Tim Tams line.
Very good.
Best biscuit or cookie.
If you had to pinpoint some film influences on this specific movie, not just on your careers in general, what comes to mind?
Oh my God, I reference so much.
Not so much film, but the Japanese.
Oh, yeah. Japanese. I reference a lot of photography and art as well, outside of film stuff. We reference Peanut Butter Falcon a lot for the ending.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And my cinematographer actually talked to the cinematographer of that film and was like, how did you do it? So we got some ideas off them. And there's a Japanese photographer, and I can't remember their name, so I'm annoyed at myself.
No, I get it.
He photographs, sounds really dodgy. He photographs schoolgirls in uniform, like out in the wild, and the whole idea, and you can never see their faces, and they're always like marching in lines or standing in little circles. And the idea is that they become one in uniform. Mm-hmm. They almost become anonymous. They could be anyone, they could be any of us. And we got really inspired by that, and that those photographs inspired a lot of our shots of the movement of the groups of girls when you see them moving through space or from one classroom to another.
Specifically, there's a shot that came to mind immediately that I was striking, because they're coming down this verdant green hill and they've all got the blue uniforms on.
And
I remember
stick out. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Completely inspired by this beautiful photographer. I have seen your photo.
Yeah, totally.
I was like, this is what we're doing.
And they were all on your walls in your office.
Yeah.
I have references for writing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go.
Without Chicken Run.
No, I love
so
that.
I actually am like...
Chicken Run.
I think it's...
It's brilliant.
I mean, I looked a lot at The Handmaiden by Park Chan-wook.
That's one of my favorite movies.
I know.
It's beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
And especially in terms of like pulling off plot twists.
Yeah.
Masterfully multiple times. I also have a film, an Australian film, Picnic at Hanging Rock.
I've never seen it.
It's really a sort of like sinister film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, arguably too sinister for what we were trying
to
do. No,
but I can see where you're like.
Yeah.
Where you're going.
It's like, I think what it does really well is juxtapose the idea of like the hostility and chaos of the natural environment with this like desperate sense to have like order that like the colonizers are trying to impose, and how that like it feels really alive, like I think really beautifully in the film, between like people's like natural impulses and this like kind of untamable world and this like desire for everything to sort of fit uniformly. And it's like very beautiful in that respect.
I think maybe one of the reasons there aren't a heap of films that we reference is because we feel like we haven't really seen many films like this that show kind of teenage girls in this way or from this era that feel relatable today, that aren't super reductive about the teenage female experience.
That's right. It was hard finding references. I remember trying to put stuff together to help pitch the film, and I was like, oh, it's kind of like this meets this, but not quite that. You know, like it feels like a jigsaw of a whole lot of different things to come together to try and encapsulate what we're trying to do.
Absolutely. And the reason I don't ask questions around that is because I'm a dude. And so I really have to question my own approach, because I've had a journey and I'm always constantly on it. But, you know, it's like, oh, feminism. And then you realize, at least you do as a man, for me, is there's all these feminism pieces that are actually quite reductive and harmful in their own way. And a lot of my female friends are like, I don't like that girl boss stuff. And, you know, that's not the true female experience as I see it. And oh, really? You know, so and then I know that Kristen Stewart, I'm a huge fan of hers. And she talks a lot about, you know, the strong female character and how we're almost put in that box now and we can't be vulnerable. Anyway, I think it's obviously it's a very complicated thing. But I thought about that a lot watching this movie, in the sense that, and I hope this isn't reductive in and of itself, but I thought about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is a film that I thought of a lot throughout the first half, but 14 Girls, obviously, which I think is huge. And that's a brilliant piece of both literature and film. Mm-hmm. So it was a huge compliment. It's how I mean it. And I hope it comes off that way.
Mm, thank you. Love the film.
Which is how I come to ask about your influences. And I think you're right that there aren't a lot of media pieces specifically like this. And I think it's part of what makes it so great.
No, I mean, I looked at a lot of stuff, a lot of Sofia Coppola's work, because she deals with a lot of her work as like young women. But again, I'm a huge fan of her work, but I didn't want to, and I'm not saying she does this, but I wanted to be really careful with the sexualization of these girls who are teenagers, you know, like I wasn't interested in shooting them in a way that could suggest that, which is another reason why, you know, a female cinematographer was really important to me, that we were we're viewing it through a female lens, literally. She's her eyes behind that camera.
And I think another thing about Sophia is she has an element of, she grew up rich. So I think, you know, you don't see that lens in this film for many reasons.
Yeah, which is why she's good with Marie Antoinette or whatever.
Like, exactly. On her. She didn't choose that. But you
totally,
know,
totally. And she does it well.
Yeah. But she did, her work. But especially Virgin Suicide.
So there's incredible films like One Who Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, who in that film represents a mainstream kind of male lead. And we don't have, there's not really that point of reference for just the details and the fabric of what it is like to be a teenage girl. And I think that's what was so beautifully explored by Josephine. You know, there's such a dichotomy of experience in this repressive institution, but also that there's these little moments of joy and exuberance and friendship and camaraderie and silliness, and that there's just a lot of detail in the fabric that I think you did. It's such a beautiful way to have room now to explore those things.
It's and like kind of interesting what you say about like girl boss feminism, and that like it's not like they were driven from like a deep sense of like ideology, or like they had a manifesto of sort of activism that like our three leads are operating from. It's almost just like these ideas in the institution just like kept getting in the way of like who they were trying to be and the lives they were trying to live.
Human.
Totally. And so
outside of
their act of resistance came like just from a sense of sort of being like constantly being forced into a box,
just wanting to exist.
Which to me, like, I think that like a lot of those and ideas of like feminism feel intuitive. They can't intuitive box you me. In.
It really freaks them out. You
yeah.
Know?
Yeah. Well, I love that line. I don't want to butcher it, but it struck out to me. The matron says it, I believe, but it's difficult to redeem a girl who believes there's nothing wrong with her.
Yeah, yeah. Such a good line.
It's such a good line.
It's because perfect.
It's the whole film, right?
It totally is. So good.
Because it shows that dichotomy.
Yeah.
All right. Got out my final draft.
I'm so glad that line stuck out for you because that's right. It does really encapsulate the film and it embodies the perspective of the, you know, the hegemonic perspective that they perceive that there's something wrong with her and she herself feels that there is nothing wrong with her. And it's such a... yeah,
because there is nothing wrong with her.
There is nothing wrong with her.
And the that's other great right. line that encompasses it is one that Rima improvised, where she says, "Life's easier if you don't resist."
Mm. Yeah.
She just threw it out yeah. there. And I was like, perfect. Mm. It's so good.
It embodies her character.
It's yeah. So good. Yeah.
That's what they want.
And she yeah, constantly she's, contradicts she's herself really through life. Yeah. She does it.
And yeah, she's really a great character. Genius. And yeah. I had a fantastic time watching this film. And I love you even took time to imply the different levels of privilege even amongst the oppressed with Louisa, right? Mm-hmm. And that scene between her and Nellie. And I really appreciated that because there's levels to this.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that as somebody who's white and male but grew up poor, you know, so it's like there's levels to, and we all...
Anyway. It's a spectrum, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And nuance and complications.
Yeah, it's not binary.
Yeah.
Everything's everywhere.
Does this film have distribution? I mean, how can I help the most? I mean, when is it? Do we have a release date, at least in the US?
Or? Talk to the big boss producer.
I mean, we just really hope that that word gets out from South By, that, uh-huh. that you know, this is a really beautiful debut from two incredible New Zealand filmmakers. Yeah. We have distribution in New Zealand and Australia, which we're really excited about. But... No, we just really need help to spread the word out of South By that this is a film to come and see.
And don't be scared of it. Like, just because there's women in it, it's okay. Yeah, you're going to find a way to relate like you have.
We're slowly
and
learning.
It's short.
Yeah.
It's short and sweet. And a half. It's like, boom, yeah. Come and see it.
I do struggle, not with that, but no, saying that to a lot of men. You know, yeah. When Turning Red came out and saw that film.
Yeah. But it's so good.
I reviewed it and I was like, I relate so much to and people were like, how? And I'm like, because I'm human.
Yeah. Right?
And I have a 2-year-old daughter too, and that helps, I think. But yeah, I was like weeping at the end.
But it goes back to that thing that we will try and label and box things.
We do.
Yeah. It makes us feel safe.
It's how our brain works, and we have to fight it consciously in a society.
Totally. So. Yeah. We have chicken run as relating to the chickens. And
absolutely. Chicken run. It all comes back to chicken run, as I always say.
Yeah, as we always say.
It really does.
We were chicken run.
Yeah.
Well, you were absolutely wonderful to speak with, truly.
Thank you, so and I, you too. You're and you so stayed. Good with your little crust. You guys are being busy.
Good job, Stu.
It's my burn book, you know.
Stu,
yes, you're a pleasure. You are a crucial
part of this. A steady hand.
He's truly wonderful. Thank you so much. It was a marvelous film.
Thank you.
I wish you all the best, and I'll do my... best to help as much as I can.
Tell Kentucky.
I will. Yeah. All of Kentucky will hear me. All six of us.
Yay!
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.